Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Paraná, which is one of the leading producers of soybeans in Brazil, had about the driest December that we have on record, and soil moisture is low. And according to the government of Paraná, a lot of their corn and soybean had already entered reproduction and was in flowering to filling stages of development.
That's USDA Chief Meteorologist Mark Brusberg.
Rio Grande do Sul was also dry, but they've also had some drier years. And the crop is a little bit later in development. Not as much of the soybeans are flowering. So there's still time for good recovery in that state.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It's important to understand the context of the decision the panel has made, because I think it reflects the Biden-Harris administration's view on trade.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack reacting to a decision against Canada with a dispute panel for USMCA.
We've got to rebuild trust in trade and in trade agreements. And one way to build that trust is to make sure that agreements that we enter into are actually enforced in the way in which they were intended. And unfortunately, with our friends in Canada, we've had a number of circumstances where they've agreed to do certain things with reference to the dairy industry, and then they have figured out creative ways around what they initially agreed to. And that was unfortunately the case with the USMCA, where they weren't basically following the agreement on tariff rate quotas. And so this decision, I think, is an indication of, A, they're going to have to live up to the letter of the agreement, the spirit of the agreement, which is important to the dairy industry. But in a larger sense, it's even more important because it sends a very clear signal for all who have concerns about whether the U.S. gets a fair shake in trade agreements. This is an administration that feels very strongly about enforcing trade agreements and using the resources under trade agreements or under international law to do so.
Speaking of trade, Phase 1 trade deal between China and the U.S. is set to come to an end.
Veronica Nye, senior economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation, says this year's numbers are better in 2021 than at the same time last year.
Thus far in 2021, which is data from January through November, we've exported $30 billion to China. That's up 33% compared to the same time period in 2020, when we had sold $22.5 billion.
Nye isn't sure that even the faster buying pace will get China to its purchasing commitments this year.
The Phase 1 goal for 2021 is $40.4 billion. At $30 billion, China is relatively close. In December 2020, China bought about $4 billion worth of U.S. ag product. Those of you doing the math, they're about $10 billion short. So far, if the pattern holds, China's going to be behind in their purchase commitments for 2021.
Nye says the relationship between the U.S. and China is challenging.
There's a lot of issues outside of agricultural trade that are significant, a lot of geopolitical issues, which means that though U.S. agriculture trade is incredibly important, you have to deal with a lot of significant political issues before you can start talking about U.S. ag trade. The additional communication and meeting between our government can only be helpful, however. The tariffs continue, but the purchase agreement is over at the end of 2021. That makes the relationship between U.S. and China all the more complicated going into 2022.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Which is why the focus is turned now to South American weather. Mark Brusberg is chief meteorologist with USDA.
The northern producing states, most notably Mato Grosso, which accounts for about a quarter of their soybean crops, is having a tremendous year. They were able to plant early. They've been getting abundant rain. The temperatures have been below normal, and that's a part of Brazil that can heat up if they don't get rain every few days. So they've just been having a fantastic year. So what we're going to have to look at in the months coming up is whether or not the good conditions in Mato Grosso and some of those other northern areas is going to be able to offset some of the losses that the farmers in Paraná might be seeing.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, The formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It was a tremendous turnaround from the years of drought that they had recently.
Talking about years of drought in Australia, but the tide has turned down under. That's according to the chief meteorologist for USDA, Mark Brusberg.
And like our western United States, when they have drought, they have animals, livestock dying, impacts on the natural environment, wildfires. So they're very similar to our western United States when there's a drought. There are issues above and beyond the impacts to agriculture.
So moving back to the U.S., what can we expect as far as weather this year?
Well, the current outlook that's issued by the National Weather Service, our partner agency, the Climate Prediction Center, just recently put out their seasonal outlook, and that's for January, February, and March. They are looking at above normal temperatures throughout much of the southern and western United States, and also drier than normal conditions. So that is a signal that would indicate that they believe that the La Nina is going to start affecting the weather at the beginning of next calendar season. Things to watch, if that's the case, would be the arrival of timely rain in the southeastern United States, because you know, we have seen some spring droughts due to La Nina dryness. They're also anticipating wet conditions in the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. This bodes a little bit better for moisture, say, for spring wheat farmers and maybe to help condition fields in the Midwest for planting corn and soybeans, as long as it's not too wet. Right now, things are very wet in the Midwest. Stream flows are still running high. We're not tracking national harvest progress anymore, but states like Michigan, Ohio, you know, parts of Wisconsin, they were late getting all of their corn and soybeans into the bin. So things are kind of wet there. So hopefully we're not going to see too much in the way of spring drought in the northern plains this year. Now, parts of the west, I mentioned the Four Corners area, is expected to be warmer and drier than normal over the winter. They had a very good monsoon season last year in the southwest, so some of the reservoirs did pick up a little bit, but the Colorado River Valley is still low. We're still seeing reservoirs, for example, Lakes Powell and Mead are still at not record lows, obviously, because, you know, they had been lower than this when they were filling it. But again, this decade-long drought has really taken a bite out of long-term moisture reserves throughout the West. So it's going to take some time. Even if they have normal rainfall this year and next year, it is going to take some time to rebuild those long-term moisture reserves. So I guess you could say that we're cautiously optimistic that planting will, you know, commence without any dryness. We just want to make sure that it's not too wet in some areas. You know, we don't want to see the crops going in late.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
This is Agriculture Today.
It is a major concern moving forward.
Brady Miller is Director of Marketing, Membership, and Education with Texas Cattle Feeders on increasing feed grain prices.
Today, I mean, we've been bouncing around at $6 corn, and I think there are a couple of things looking into 2022 that are problem areas for the cattle producer in the U.S. One, and I'll start off by saying this, one is I think it's the drought and the continual drought type atmosphere that we have found ourselves in. And I think that's going to occur, if you listen to the climatologists, that's going to occur here for the next 8 or 9 months before we end up turning into a El Nino type climate pattern. But the other one that you mentioned was inflation. And when I talk inflation at the meat counter is real and it has occurred, and we see it and hear it in the news all the time. But for the U.S. cattle producer, one of the things that is important is also the inflation and the input cost. So we always talk about price, and I started off this conversation with saying today the feed yards are making about $140 per hundredweight coming out of the feed yard. A year ago, I mentioned that we were making $110. From the point from going from $110 to $140, we were losing about $100 an animal on a cash basis. And I think today where I'm going with this discussion is today, and if we look into it's at least through the middle part of 2022, that I think we're going to stay in this 140 to 145 range. And we go from making money on the animal that is leaving the yard today to when you talk about replacing that animal that you shipped for harvest, that animal that is coming into the yard is actually about a $100 loser. And so that was a long-winded way of saying inflation plays a big role, because the inflation piece of that is the cause for, yes, we can make more money per animal, but that doesn't mean you're more profitable as you make more money because of the inflation piece.
And is the drought from 10 years ago still in the back of our minds?
We have many bad memories from that. Unfortunately, I think if we don't see moisture here pretty soon, it started in the West in 2021, and now it's just expanded across the South and the South Plains, and I think it will continue to spread across, into Louisiana and hit some of that area. So the drought is a big, big thing that we have coming, looking and staring us in the face. We're hoping that we get some timely rains and that everything turns out okay, but it's one of the big factors that we have to look at, and it's one of the big drivers in profitability and what this thing looks like moving forward. The other issues that I think we have to pay attention to in 2022, of course, we talked about inflation, and those are input inflations, along with inflation at the meat counter. If the consumer can't afford to buy a product, it doesn't fare well for no matter how much product you produce or you don't produce and what prices you get. So I think between drought and inflation moving forward are two key factors that we have to look at. And then I'm going to throw one in here, and we have to look at what the government and the spending and the funds that are going and where that money is going. So I think, and the main issue I'm talking about here, and it's been a discussion over the last couple of years, is how much government intervention, how much government help do we need in this industry to help keep it sustainable and profitable moving forward. And so I named three big issues there that we have to look out for and that we have to manage moving forward. And I think we'll end up working through it as we have always in the past, but there are issues that we have to manage.
It's Agriculture Today.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'd like to use neighborhood because neighborhood resonates with our allies and partners in Latin America. And the proximity to our homeland here in the United States, folks don't realize how close the Southcom AOR and all of these 31 countries in the Caribbean, Central America, South America. I can go to 83% of the countries in the Southcom AOR in a shorter time distance than it took most of you to come from D.C. here to this forum.
General Laura Richardson is commander of the U.S. Southern Command on the proximity of our neighbors.
But when you think about what is in Latin America in terms of the Amazon, they call it the lungs of the world. You have 31% of the world's fresh water is in Latin America. You have the lithium. 60% of the lithium in the world is in the lithium triangle, Argentina, Bolivia, Chile. You've got a lot of rare earth minerals, resources, and capabilities that, in my mind, go hand in hand with what the Chinese are doing with the Belt and Road Initiative and expanding their reach into Latin America, just like they did in Africa. And so a lot of folks don't understand all of the rich resources that are really there in Latin America and in our Western Hemisphere. In terms of trade, I'll just talk about trade. If I talk about Western Hemisphere, add Canada and Mexico to it, $1.9 trillion. Western Hemisphere is U.S.'s number one trading partner with $1.9 trillion. And so it's off the charts what this AOR offers. And so just I want to share that because as I've learned all of the great things about this region, I think it's very vulnerable. And so that goes to the point of why we have to be present all the time, working really closely, using all the levers available to work with our partners as they deal with these cross-cutting challenges.
So as China continues to grow its relationships in South America, Alan Brugler talks about concerns.
I think there's a lot of concern about our relationships with China across the board, whether it's what they're threatening to do with Taiwan or whether it's the trade or if it's intellectual property. There's some major power competition there. It's somewhat similar to the Cold War with the Russians. In that signaling is very important. What you say isn't necessarily what you're going to do, but it's what you want the other side to know that you're thinking. Relative to trade, the Chinese have a long history of not wanting to be the market. If it's their buying that's driving up the price, they find a way to not buy anymore, to cut back on purchases, to switch to another commodity, to basically not be the market. Phase one kind of forced them to be the market the first year when President Trump was in office. That deal, if you remember, was signed between President Trump and the Vice President Liu He in China. So it was not a government-to-government deal. It was only personally guaranteed by those people. So with President Biden in, now the Chinese are acting like they don't need to honor it or think they have to honor it. And given that need to or that intention over time to cut back and not be the market, you're seeing them underbuy. All right. We're seeing they're not buying what they would need to buy to meet their phase one commitment in year two. Although the first half of the year, the dollar flows were bigger than last year, but they're not going to make the targets. And they're clearly not buying what we would anticipate they would buy for corn or soybeans, given our projections for market share for the year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight, simple, sold.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So we're pleased that we've seen from USDA so far a focus, kind of where our focus is on some of that regional processing capacity, some of that diversified processing capacity. We're excited to hear more from them, having gone through that rulemaking process to see where their head is at as far as the rest of that $500 million. We're going to stay engaged on that issue moving forward and help look for as many opportunities we can for our producers.
Ethan Lane, Vice President, Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
We're also obviously continuing to focus on things like price discovery. Our voluntary framework, even with trip triggers going into our Houston meeting, has resulted in a pretty dramatic increase in negotiated and cash trade around the country, particularly in those regions that were underperforming on cash trade, that had thinner cash markets historically. That's not an accident. That's a lot of work by a lot of our producers around the country to find ways to market more of their cattle in a negotiated means over the course of the year. They've done that sometimes in places where they maybe didn't want to, where that wasn't the best business decision for them. And it's part of this effort to make sure we have the price discovery we need in this marketplace. We know that's not sustainable long term, and we're going to need to find some options to make sure that producers, first of all, have the ability to choose the best marketing method for their cattle. Rather than a government mandate telling them how to market their cattle, they need to be able to pick the best option for them. But we need to make sure as well that we're guaranteeing we have that healthy, robust price discovery that we need to inform the base prices on some of those AMAs and make sure that we have a real indicator out there of what these cattle are worth on the market from week to week. So we're going to continue our focus on that. Our affiliates around the country are having their conversations as well, and we expect to have a robust dialogue in Houston on where we go from here in this conversation.
Tanner Beamer is Director of Government Affairs and Market Regulatory Policy with NCBA.
You know, the Koontz numbers that we use to establish the baselines for our voluntary price discovery program, those numbers are really the only specific volumes for cattle trades that we have to inform this price discovery question. But that being said, they are 5 years old at this point, and by Dr. Koontz's own admission, they were only meant as kind of an academic exercise. But because that was all we had to go off of, those are the numbers that we used. And so I think that there was some concern from packers that we had teed this program up in the midst of perhaps one of the most volatile supply chain incidents that has hit the cattle industry and probably since BSE in 2003, to be honest. And so there was some concern about plant capacities being, you know, less than what they were when that research was originally conducted. But I think regardless of that, there was some widespread recognition among all of the packers and certainly among the producers that more negotiated trade in the marketplace is going to be a good thing because we've had really thin markets for a while now. Not all of that is a bad thing because it is the industry originally asked for some of these formula agreements to capture some additional value via those premiums. And the industry has responded to that in kind. But right now, what we have to determine is how we're going to strike that balance. So in terms of what we're going to look at in the fourth quarter, you know, obviously we have tripped that second trigger. So we are going to go back to the Live Cattle Marketing Committee in Houston at our 2022 convention to determine what the next steps are there. But I think we are expecting to see a continuation of the positive trends in negotiated trade that we have seen over the course of this past year since we teed that up. Obviously, this is going into a season where there's fewer cattle procurements. It's just kind of a cyclical part of the annual cattle cycle where there's just not a lot of activity going on in the cash markets. But we should start to see a little bit of an uptick again that just follows cyclical patterns once we get into the second, third week of January.
It's Agriculture Today.
Your grandpa, his dad, and your dad all grew up working the land. You too want to follow in their footsteps. Capital Farm Credit wants to be your financial partner. Capital Farm Credit has been around for nearly a century. We share the deep passion of the agricultural industry. We honor you and those who came before you, those who want to keep the legacy alive. Let us finance your legacy. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
For years, cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from America. You can depend on NextGen varieties for performance and yields year after year. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Oh, and one other thing. AmeriCod is now offering cotton seed treatments to protect your seed investment against your early season challenges. To find out more, contact your local NextGen representative or seed dealer today. AmeriCod. All we do is cotton. All the time.
This is Agriculture Today.
It's not just about money. It's also about rules and regulations.
At a White House roundtable on competition on Monday, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
And we are strengthening our packers and stockyards enforcement effort by leveling the playing field for producers and processors. And we're also working on a voluntary label program called Product of the USA to allow consumers to know exactly where their resources, their consuming dollar is being spent. We think this is going to better inform consumers in making choices. And we're looking forward to the creative partnership that we have with the Department of Justice, a strong working relationship in terms of enforcement. Mr. President, what this really is all about at the end of the day is improving farm income. It's about creating good-paying jobs in rural America that are so necessary. It's about giving the consumers choice and a break at the grocery store. And it's exciting work. And we at USDA are really engaged in this and involved in working with our farm partners, as I suspect you'll hear today. There are stories of woe out there, but we are committed to making a difference. And we're looking forward to working with Attorney General Garland and his great team at the Department of Justice in terms of antitrust enforcement.
And explains to reporters the disconnect.
For far too long, we've had an extraction economy in rural America where these guys work 24/7, 365 days a year, raising these cattle, and then they transport them hundreds of miles away, and the profits basically go thousands of miles away. What Scott's talking about is retaining those profits in the small towns. That's going to create opportunities for farmers to be able to better afford that machinery. That's going to keep the implement dealer in business. They're going to be able to support that Main Street business. That's going to keep those retail stores in business. And it's also going to create jobs. And I think it's really important to emphasize it's not just farmers who are going to benefit from this. It's also rural folks looking for a decent job. And if we do this right, with workforce training, with assistance, we can have good-paying jobs to complement what's happening on the farm. So this is an incredible thing. Just so you understand how dire this is, Mr. President, and I'll finish with this. I was in Council Bluffs, Iowa, talking to a farmer this summer, and he came up to me and he said, Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for doing this. He said, I just sold a load of cattle. And he said, this is what irritates me about this whole system. I lost $150 a head. $150 a head I lost on this cattle, but I know the processor that purchased those cattle is going to make $1,800 a head. And he looked at me and he said, Mr. Secretary, how is that fair? It's not.
Which is why Scott Blubaugh, president of the Oklahoma Farmers Union, says it's misleading.
It's a little bit misleading that we have four of these very large companies and processors, but they're located more regionally. So in many cases, there's only one option to sell to. And so it's a take it or leave it price that you're offered. So when we try to go around that system and not give our cattle away to these multinational companies, but if we can process them on a local level and then sell directly to consumers, it's just a win-win for everybody. It's a win for the consumer. They get more choices. In my opinion, they get a better product. And we know because of the pandemic has shown us and proven to us that consumers want to buy local if they can. And they want to know where their food comes from. And they trust the American farmer and rancher to do that. And their faith in the American farmer rancher is far greater than any of these multinational companies. So it's just a win-win for everyone I see, except maybe these four companies we're talking about.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As hog producers close the books on 2021 and make their plans for 22, one expert says the byword for those plans seems to be caution, as producers take a wait-and-see attitude, and in the meantime, trying to keep herd size and pork production steady as possible. USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer told us it's not surprising producers are cautious about making any changes considering how prices behaved in 2021.
If we look over the distance that hog prices traveled through this year, rising sharply into the middle of the year and easing off, but still having pretty strong prices even here at the end of the year for hogs. So you're looking at easing prices into 22, but still a pretty good price.
The latest USDA forecast has 2022 hog prices averaging $60 and a quarter, down about 10% from 2021. Hogs, the only meat animal expected to fetch a lower price in 22. Gary Crawford, Washington.